This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Hello, and welcome to the brand spanking new movie review show on Vectis Radio. This evening, we have a kick-ass Amazonian woman, lumbering corpses, and zombie sharks. But enough about my two co-hosts in the studio with me, who are furiously trying to figure out which one of them is which. But before we go any further, some of you might be wondering, who are these people who have taken over your friendly radio community station? Who are these cinematic crusaders who venture to the cinema every week on your behalf? Honestly, it's not because we have an unhealthy love of movies at all. It really, really isn't. It's all because of you. Well, up first is me, Tosin. Now, you may remember me or my voice from the movie reviews that happened during the mid-morning show with Macca on a Thursday morning, but I have spread my wings, escaped his tyrannical rule, and ended up with an even longer piece of space that he's still in charge of. So, never, but that's me, that's Tosin. Next up is Sharon. Now, if there is a movie, okay, Sharon, say hello.
Hello.
Say hello to the island, yeah, that's cool.
Hello, I love white.
Now, this is Sharon, and if there's a movie being shown on the cinema that is in some way romantic.
Yes.
Period.
Yes.
Or adapted from a book.
Me, yes.
She is your woman. Although, do not expect her to see anything that is in any way animated.
No.
Unless you have managed to drag her kicking and screaming.
No, weapons or violence need to be involved before I work to anything animated.
Okay, you see, now, I'm actually quite happy about that because I wrote that intro and I was thinking, now, I think this is Sharon, but Sharon might take, like, you know, umbrage at that, to use a Jane Austen word. She might think, oh, no, that isn't me. But would you say that that's right?
That's pretty fair, though I do have a guilty pleasure for some schlock horror. Oh. So you will see me turning up at zombie films because I do have a bit of a secret passion for all things zombie. But yeah, you're pretty accurate in all those assessments.
All right, cool. You see, now that's good because if there's a horror movie, there's a pretty good chance that I'm not going to have seen it.
Yeah.
Because I'm the person who is not such a big fan of horror. I still haven't seen Alien. What was the last one?
Covenant.
That was it. I still haven't seen Alien Covenant.
You didn't miss a lot.
No, I was going to say.
If we have time, I'll tell you what my ideas were, what my thoughts were about that without even seeing it. But, and also, the funny thing is that, because you said, it's funny that you said the zombies thing, because I have a note down here that bringing all your loves together is Pride and Prejudice and zombies, because
yes, that did coalesce rather well, and it was my birthday. We went to see that as my birthday film last year I remember
that we went for a group out to the cinema to go see, like, you know, Pride and Prejudice and zombies for you.
Yeah.
I've yet to see that.
Oh, you ought to.
Okay,
the book was almost unreadable, I have to say, but the film was just quite was fun.
Well, that is, I'll tell you what, right, I actually think Pride and Prejudice and zombies, I think it's the most cinematic adaptation of anything Jane Austen ever, because I always said that Jane Austen stuff is always people walk into a room, then leave the room, they walk into a room, then leave the room. In Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, it's actually stuff you're like, oh, this is worth looking at. I think the opening sequence with Darcy and the fly that he takes out of the bottle, I think is a brilliant, brilliant sequence. So if you can, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a good birthday film.
Okay, and now here we have, you've heard him already, and the third member of our intrepid team is Sean.
Hiya, everybody.
Hello, Sean. And now, Sean is the closest thing to an excitable teenager in a 50-something-year-old body I've ever seen. You know, Sean is the most likely to blurt out a spoiler from sheer love of what he has just seen on the cinema screen, and give him a Western or a war movie and he is totally in his element. Although, having lived through the latter days of John Wayne and the heyday of Clint Eastwood, he has quite a high standard when it comes to comparing stuff at the cinema nowadays. Would you say that's right, Sean?
I would say that's right, yeah. I'm quite critical, and some people might even say a bit picky about certain things. You know, I like a bit of authenticity in the movies. I guess that's exactly right. War, Western, I like my crime films, and like Sharon, I really enjoy horror movies too.
although being critical, you do every now and then become like you become a defender for what I would call a terrible movie.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I am. I tend to go a bit left. Everybody goes right. I'm one of these people that tends to go left sometimes.
Yeah, because I remember I reviewed a film called Pompeii.
Pompeii, yeah.
On this radio station. It was one of the first ones I think I ever reviewed on Macca's show on a Thursday morning. And I was listening back to my review of that film, and it included the words, "This is a stupid film." With, like, an unreservedly stupid film. But you are one of the few people I know who defends that film.
I defended that film. I really enjoyed it. And I was thinking about this, and I was thinking there must be certain factors when somebody enjoys a film. Like, because sometimes I've seen a film once, but I've been quite tired and I've thought that's not very good. But when I've seen it a second time, I find, oh yeah, it was much better than I remembered it. But with Pompeii, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great fun. Everybody hated it. I really enjoyed it. It was like Tarzan. A lot of people were upset with the latest Tarzan movie, but I mean, I loved that. That was just I saw that three times, actually. So much I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, you weren't even like, you know, a woman of a certain age who was looking at his body.
No. I just enjoyed the...
I think probably about that.
Did we go to see that together, Tarzan?
I'm not sure. I went there for purely superficial reasons.
All right.
And I wasn't disappointed.
You were like, Alexander
Sarsgaard. Yeah.
Oh, did we see him in the Redemption? Was he in that?
The Redemption. Oh, no. That's Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, yeah. Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, yes. Tick.
That's Salvation.
Sorry, yes.
Yes,
Salvation.
We definitely saw
that.
Yeah,
we definitely saw that.
Yes.
Good Western.
Okay, cool. Good modern day Western. So, but anyway, without further ado, we have an hour. And in this hour, we are going to go through what is on at the local cineplexes, well, the two that we have on the island nowadays, in Cineworld, Cineworld and Coppins Bridge and the Commodore Cinema in Ryde. One of those names, if one of them decides to actually start sponsoring this show, the other name will just drop off and we know it's
not be spoken. We'll never mention them ever again.
Never mention them ever again. But we're gonna talk about what we've seen in the cinema this week, and we're gonna kick off with the big hitters. Kicking off with a film that has been released for at least a week, but it's still, like, I think a pretty big thing at the box office, and this thing is still pretty something worth talking about, and that is Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman.
I actually wanted to find that tune. I wanted to find that tune with Linda Carter spinning around and everything like that. So Wonder Woman, this is the first time. Wonder Woman is 75 years old. She was created 75 years ago, and this is the first time that we're ever seeing her on a cinema screen.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is. It is Wonder Woman's screen debut. Wow. It's the first time we've ever seen her in a cinema screen, and it's like a big thing that everybody has been speaking about because we had the TV show in the 70s.
Yeah, we all know Linda Carter. If you're above 40, you know Linda Carter. Well, you're not above 40, but you know Linda Carter.
I know Linda Carter.
I remember the images and the TV program, but I never actually watched Wonder Woman.
I've seen
one episode of Wonder Woman. I don't think that
there's that many. I think it only lasted for three seasons.
Right.
It kind of happened a bit. Something similar happened with the Batman show that happened in the 60s, in that you had a couple of seasons, then it got a bit too expensive, and then just kind of it's like cutting corners and all that. But I remember the way she used to change was just by twirling around
yeah,
in an alleyway somewhere,
putting her arms in a sort of X shape, and whoosh, away she went.
Yeah.
I guess her first appearance, Otoes, would be Batman, Dawn of...
Superman.
She wasn't Batman versus Superman.
But this is the first standalone movie.
It's the first time when you've actually had something that focuses on Wonder Woman. There was apparently a TV pilot that failed a couple of years ago, which everybody says, no, it was bad, they didn't understand the character at all. But this is the problem, they don't let you watch TV pilots. I would love to see that.
Mm.
So we've all seen Wonder Woman.
Yes.
All right. And just a little bit of the storylines. This is Wonder Woman. She's an Amazonian who lives on an island called Themyscira, where there's just all women who have been put there by the gods. So this is a film. It's part of the DC Extended Universe, and it's talking about, and it sets out the stalls early that, okay, look, we're talking about something kind of supernatural here. They're there by the gods, and she has, but it's during World War One. A pilot sort of crashes through this sort of veil that's over the island, and she gets drawn into World War One because she feels like she has a duty, and the way she was raised, she has a duty to look after mankind and help mankind in when they're having the trouble. And she has this whole thing where she's trying to find the god of war, Ares, so she can kill him, because she believes when she kills the god of war, all war will end.
Will end, yeah.
So what did you guys think of Wonder Woman?
I had a thumbs up for me, I have to say. A strong woman character.
Yep.
She wasn't objectified in any way. For all the fact that in the past, Linda Carter was known for the sort of the overtly sexy costume, wasn't she? Even though it was a television show, but it was all about her femininity. And this wasn't just about her femininity. She was a beautiful woman who played the... You can pronounce the name better than I can.
Gal Gadot. Yeah.
She's a stunning lady, but it wasn't all about just her sexuality. She was a strong, she was honourable, she was, you know, fighting for right. Yeah, it ticked all the boxes for me. I thought she did it so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and in the past, Wonder Woman has always been synonymous with like American. Her costume has been like red, white, and blue,
yeah,
and she's like been the, almost
has,
like
she has the blue sort of trunks with like the stars on it and everything.
Yeah, and she's almost like she's been adopted
almost
as an
like
American
Rocky.
Icon.
Like
yeah,
Rocky.
But this
Apollo Creed.
Oh my God, that's where Rocky got his outfit from.
Yeah,
Rocky's
Apollo Creed.
Apollo Creed's dressed like Wonder Woman. I just realised that.
But I think this one where she had a European accent. Well, to me, it sounded more European, but I think it's like pan-European. But she was not cast in that all-American mold. She was, I just thought they did it really well. She was strong physically and just, yeah, she did that, she owned that part, you know. Mm-hmm. That's a term that's used too much, yeah, isn't it? But she totally inhabited that role, I thought, and I was really impressed with it.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, I really, really enjoyed the movie, and I thought the backstory was just you know, like the start off where she is and how she gets involved in the modern world was just great. You know, because sometimes you get some origin stories which are a little bit...
Yeah.
But this, you know, I mean, I thought, yeah, this is great. It really works, you know, really works.
I thought some of the secondary characters really good. I loved Lucy Davis as the... She was like the pilot she meets, she's played by Chris Pine, his secretary. She's like an Edwardian, one of her time, sort of pre-suffragette. Well, it's about the same time as the subject, but she's obviously not one of these.
Yeah, she was great.
But she was great, and she like teaches her to dress, how to dress as a modern woman. And she was like, no, you can't fight in this outfit. She goes, well, I have been known to engage in the odd fisticuffs.
Fisticuffs, yeah, that sounded just like it. That was a great impression. Fisticuffs.
And she was just perfect. It's like a comic relief, and it's almost like a real woman next to this Amazon. It was I just loved her.
I love the bit where she meets her for the first time, and she goes like, he's like, oh hi, yes, I'm Steve Trevor's secretary. He's like, what's a secretary? Oh, I kind of go, I go where he says, I do what he wants. And he's like, oh, you mean where I come from? We call those slaves. And Lucy Davis is like, I like her. But yeah, so yeah, but I agree with you. I think those things were quite good. I feel the film sort of like crackled and just sort of moved along, and it felt like, because this is part of the DC extended universe, anybody who's been near a cinema in the last decade will know that Marvel movies have become this big thing. Mm. You have your Iron Man and your Thors and your Captain Americas, and Marvel have built this big, massive extended universe where all these films feed into each other, and that's what everybody is trying to get into nowadays. Everybody's trying to do, and I think two of the films that we're still going to talk about are trying to get into that whole extended
multiverse,
universe.
Yeah.
That whole multiverse, all these different films. Sean, you have something to say?
Yeah, I did. Funny you should say that, Matt. I thought some of the sort of multi-action scenes were more or less taken from Avengers Age of Ultron. I did think that, like, a few, I think they borrowed some stuff. I think they'd learnt from the Marvel and thought, okay, we better, some of the, you know, where they're fighting multiple characters.
Oh, yeah,
it did
see,
you know, the slight slow motion shots
in
now and again,
yes,
and all that.
Yes.
And it really reminded me of
that look
in the Age of Ultron, like sort of the penultimate
battle. I see what you mean. Like, there's a bit where she gets into a warfield, into a battlefield in World War One.
That's
supposed to be in Belgium or something.
Yeah.
And there's a bit where she's fighting through it's a brilliant action scene.
It's a great action scene, but I think they borrowed.
Yeah, but I see what you mean. I see what you mean.
Where the bullets come whizzing at her and she deflects them, and that sort of.
I think it's even the bits where she sort of like goes on her knees and she has
that's
a sword.
That's the one.
And
you've
like,
got it. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's very much, you know, those just those odd bits of slow mo that which.
But they handled the First World War scenes very sensitively as well, because
very.
Yeah. Because you don't want them to sort of minimalise what the impact of that was, especially, you know, we sort of celebrating the 100 years of a lot of these battles, and we see, when we look go through Newport, we see the monument in Newport, and there's like 1,500 names on there from the Isle of Wight.
Yeah.
And you think, you can't sort of dismiss that conflict as being something that didn't have a massive impact in this country. And I thought the way they treated it was really sensitive. They went to they had the battles, but it wasn't like, oh, this was... The war was meaningless, and it didn't, you know, it was it was sacrificed for nothing. It was made it look like they did honour the people who before them.
And I think the way they went about it, because you had because you're seeing this whole thing from Diana, that's Wonder Woman's perspective.
Yeah,
you're seeing it from her, and she's kind of like this sort of ingenue in the world. She's this kind of like
innocent of the world.
She doesn't really, and so you see that she's looking, she's like, oh my God, this is terrible. And this, and even for a comic book movie, there's some real sort of like scenes where she's just thinking, why the heck is man doing this? Why are you killing each other?
You can understand this point of view. It's like,
because there's a one scene where she's heading towards the war and she's quite excited that she's going to be facing up to what she thinks is Ares.
Yeah.
And then she sees this trail of wounded coming off some of the hospital ships.
Yes.
And she's just passing men who are in shell shocked or wounded, and you can
missing
see the
limbs and all.
Yeah,
that.
The impact
of quite emotional actually, because she starts to feel emotional about it.
War
actually
is.
See the emotion.
Yeah, and even the way they go about it, like I think the way that it's handled. I mean, first of all, Sharon, everything you said about having a strong female character, a comic book movie. It's like the first comic book movie, especially in this new wave that has a female central character.
Yes,
and I think that
of all of the different franchises,
the first one that has a female central character. So DC managed to get one thing right.
I think it helped that it was a female director, though, wasn't it?
I think it really, really did.
I think they knew how to film it, and even the scenes with the Amazons at the beginning.
Yes,
they treated it with. They weren't like, oh look, women fighting, all snigger. These were strong women.
Women that you look at and go, oh yeah, I wouldn't want to go into a fight with her.
Yeah. Yeah. They knew what they were doing. They weren't just like waving swords about. They were skilled fighters. Yeah, it's good. I thought it was well done.
Yeah.
And one of my friends, on a superficial note, she went to see it and she came back and told her husband, those thighs. If you've seen it, all the women, they had these amazingly sculpted thighs.
Really?
Well,
getting old, I guess.
Well, I think, actually, when you think about it, that beginning bit...
Oh, what? The Amazons?
The Amazons.
Yeah, that beginning bit of Themyscira is a bit like... It's a little bit like a female version of 300.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were like perfect specimens every...
But that's because
form of woman.
Everyone... I was actually on a film set recently with someone who was a stunt woman on Wonder Woman, and she said that was like one of the best things she's ever been, because it was all like 50 women just going around, going all these fighting scenes and just being like, yeah, look at us, warriors. And she said she absolutely loved it. And I think, but I know that they had to go, one of the actors, Robin Wright, who you would see in House of Cards now on Netflix and everything, and she plays Wonder Woman's aunt, who trains her to be a warrior. And she said when she was offered the role, and they said you're going to have to go for a boot camp, because all the women had to go for a boot camp to get into shape before they actually went to play all these Amazonian warriors. She said she did it because I'm going to be in the best shape of my life at the age of 50.
Yeah.
So she said that's why I did that role. So yeah, I agree. I think this is it's okay. In the DC extended universe, you've had Man of Steel, you've had Batman vs Superman, which have had the same sort of creative team, and now you have Wonder Woman that has a totally different creative team. Mm. You have some of the same names show up as executive producers, but that doesn't really mean that they have any creative input. And I think this, for me, was so good because you also had Suicide Squad. And this was away from everything else. Mm. It doesn't try and link into anything else. It has vague that it's linked to the wider world. And I always thought that this seemed to be the most well thought out bit of the entire DC universe.
At the moment,
it stands really, heads and shoulders above the others.
It really, really does.
But they needed to, didn't they, really?
If this had tanked, that was the end of it.
That was it, yeah.
I mean, apparently, there's a meme you can find online. There's a cartoon of Superman and Batman looking all beaten up and bruised, and there's Wonder Woman in the middle holding them both going, don't worry, I got this.
That's good.
And I actually think that is really accurate.
But I did enjoy Man of Steel, actually, to be fair.
The thing is, I love the first half of Man of Steel.
Yeah.
I think the first half of Man of Steel is one of the best superhero things I've ever seen. The second half of Man of Steel goes stupid.
Right.
It goes stupid, and then it just goes worse and worse and worse. So it goes from what would have been a four... getting bordering on maybe 5-star movie to like a 2.5.
Yeah, film with two halves. Yeah.
Yeah, once they start fighting, you just think,
once they start fighting, that film just loses all. It throws everything good it did in the first hour out of the window.
Yeah, once they start smashing up buildings, you think, oh, really, another tower block you're going to smash up? Why?
Yeah, exactly. So, what would you guys say? Out of 5 stars, how many stars would you give Wonder Woman?
4.
4.
I'll go with 4 as well.
Yeah. I did think, just one last point on that as well, the Ares did remind me very much of Magneto out of X-Men.
Oh, Danny Houston.
Oh, no. The actual, like, the Ares costume.
Oh, the costume.
And the end battle. I thought that they borrowed again.
Yeah.
Well, I agree with you, because the end battle, I think, lets it down a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I actually reckon, right, and you understand this when you watch the film, I reckon that it would have been better in a suit and tie for the entire fight.
Yeah.
I think it would have been better, but that's not a spoiler, but no. I think it would have been fun.
Yeah.
I think it would have been fun. All right, cool. So let's carry on to the next movie that we're going to talk about today, and this is The Mummy.
The Mummy.
The Tom Cruise starring
From the sublime to the ridiculous.
Mission Impossible. Mission Impossible 6.
Okay. All right, okay. All right, you might have figured out a little bit of what people think about this film just from what has been said in the room so far. But before we get before we go on there, The Mummy, this is the reboot of the Universal horror thing. And we spoke about everybody ever since Marvel did it, and Marvel have been so successful and pretty much own Hollywood for the last decade. Everybody's trying to get a shared universe. So this is Universal, and they have a whole bunch of classic horror movie monsters. They've got The Mummy, they've got Dracula. They've got the Wolfman.
Wolfman.
Jekyll and Hyde.
Jekyll and Hyde, Frankenstein.
Did they have the Invisible Man?
Bride of Frankenstein. They actually don't have Jekyll and Hyde. He's a new addition.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, but they have the... What is it? The Creature from Under?
The Black Lagoon.
Creature from Black Lagoon.
Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Those are all the films that I used to watch when I was a kid on TV.
Yeah, I remember the Black and White. The Black and White Universal ones. Yeah.
So, hopefully... It might get people to revisit them. Some youngsters might actually revisit the older movies.
I think so.
Did we say the Mummy? Obviously, The Mummy is
the
in there.
The Mummy, yeah.
With Imhotep and all that.
Boris Karloff was the original one.
Those are the 30s, weren't they?
Yeah. 30s, yeah.
The original Universal Monster movies were made in the 1930s.
They still resonate, though. You watch them now, and they still make you go a bit, ooh, when you watch them.
Yeah.
They work.
I remember watching Frankenstein and thinking, I don't want to go to bed.
Okay, and so that... That is so. From what you said on that, that gives you an idea about what we think about this new one. So this has been previously rebooted, The Mummy, in 1999 with Brendan Fraser, Rachel Weisz, John Hannah, and all the. And this is and so that they had three movies of those, and now they've decided to. Oh, we want this shared universe, and The Mummy is the first salvo, and they're bringing them all together, and they've thrown some star power at Tom Cruise to flash his megawatt smile and get everybody in the cinema. How did it go for you guys?
I was amazingly underwhelmed by it all.
For me, I think it was just Tom Cruise.
Exactly.
It was a Mission Impossible movie, I thought.
It was far too dependent on how much you believe Tom Cruise, his character, and how much you like him. And the fact that his character is supposed to be this lovable rogue, you know, he's a thief, he's a treasure hunter, he's a bit, he likes to push the boundaries, and I just thought he was tiresome.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you on that.
And when when any moment when he's imperiled, you know that he isn't going to be in serious danger, because this is Tom Cruise.
There's
no sense of danger. It's like...
Well, the thing is, I feel like I agree with everything you guys have said, and I feel like there's a danger of every single film that Tom Cruise stars in, and Sean has alluded to it, becoming a Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah.
Because there's bits of this that made me think, like, that it's in the trailer. If you watch the trailer for The Mummy,
there's a scene in the aeroplane.
There's a scene in the aeroplane which looks almost like they've taken the same plane, they've taken the same setting as the scene in Mission Impossible 5.
I mean, it's in the trailer as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, it's in the trailer.
It seems like it's almost in there. You think it's like Tom Cruise pulling the same face and all that kind of stuff. And there's, when we talk about the original Universal ones, you say even when you watch them now, there's still this sense of place. There's this sense of otherworldliness about that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether it's the black and white. I think some of it might be the fact that...
Yes, it's just the lighting, the style of it.
Yeah, the style of it was really, really important when they made those films.
Yeah.
And I think also the fact that the Egypt that they presented in those films is just so otherworldly, especially if you're from a Western country.
Yeah.
It's something that you've never seen before. And those films take place entirely in Egypt, for instance. So it's like this whole other world and all that kind of stuff. And I feel that this film, it loses its sense of place, and it loses its sense of, once the second they go, right, let's jet off to that place. Now let's jet off to that place. And I'm thinking it just becomes like, you know, like a wannabe Bond movie / Mission Impossible thing.
Exactly. And even though most of the film is set in England, it didn't feel like a recognisable England, did it? It was like merry old England, you know, in the countryside with this parts of it. And then you had London, you know, Corbline, Governor, London. And it was just, it didn't work.
The thing I noticed while I was watching is that most of this film is set indoors.
Yes.
Like, they don't really go outside in London that much. There's one scene in which they go outside. Although I have to say, the mummy being a woman really, really worked, I thought. And
yeah, she was probably the best thing about
it. Sofia Boutella as the mummy. I think she was brilliant.
Yeah.
Probably the best thing about it. Even though the character is a little bit stupid, because obviously you know the mummy movie, you know the mummy's gonna lose.
Yes.
And what the reason she ends up losing in the end, you're thinking, hang on a second.
That made no sense.
If you just not done that, you could have been fine.
Yeah.
If you just gone on. Okay, I don't want to give it. I don't want to give it away.
No.
It's like, but if you just gone and done something else, you would have been fine.
Yeah.
but it just carries on, and I also feel like when we compare it, because when I was talking about the sense of place, even the Brendan Fraser Mummy movies, they had that.
Yes. Yeah, I really like the first one, particularly.
Yeah.
The Mummy. I still think that really holds up now. You can watch it and be thoroughly entertained all the way through, yeah, completely.
And they have a sense of fun.
Yeah, it's fun. It's got tension.
Yeah, the tension, it sort of sparkles, it crackles all,
yeah,
like, all the way.
Yeah, there's chemistry
the
between all the characters.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed The Mummy.
Yeah, this one, I didn't feel there was a lot of chemistry between Tom Cruise and his female lead.
Annabelle, I got the
feeling.
Wallace.
Yeah, I just got the feeling she was just a bird in it. And I just thought, I didn't really feel that she added much of anything to the film.
Yeah, because it's about Tom Cruise.
Yeah, and even his sidekick, I thought, they tried to add elements of, like, American Werewolf in London, without giving too many spoilers, but he has, like, this pal who turns up, mm-hmm, and have these sort of supposed to be, like, quirky conversations. And to me, it didn't work. I just thought he was a device, but I didn't feel like there was their relationship there, and I didn't feel that he added anything other than just like,
yeah,
oh, how do we get Tom Cruise from A to B? Oh, we'll add this guy in as a device to get him from A to B.
What about Russell Crowe? What did you guys think of Russell Crowe?
I like Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe plays
a character called Henry.
Yeah.
We find out later,
yeah,
his last name is Jekyll. Dun, dun, dun.
I quite like Russell Crowe in this.
The thing is, the fact that this film starts off with the Universal logo and then straight off goes into Dark Universe and gives you a Dark Universe, they already have a logo. It tells you,
yeah,
that they're so trying to launch a shared universe.
Yeah. You saw different things at different points in the film. You're going, that's
the Invisible Man.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think they tried hard, but I think it was just far too Tom Cruise dependent.
Yeah.
If you're not charmed by him from the beginning, and I wasn't, you're just thinking, oh, here we go.
Yeah, there was
2 hours, I'm never getting back.
I must admit, I've never, ever been a major, major fan of Tom Cruise, I'm afraid.
I think I liked him in Rock of Ages, which it's not everyone's favourite film, but I also liked him in Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow, I'll give it, yeah, okay.
I think he was good in that, but then he died in practically every other scene, so that's got to be a bonus, isn't it?
You see, my brother has this issue with Tom Cruise. He says that he doesn't like Tom Cruise because in every single film Tom Cruise is, he's the saviour of the world.
Yeah.
It's like even The Last Samurai,
yeah.
They bring out a gun, everybody dies, the horse he's riding on dies, but Tom Cruise doesn't because he's the saviour of the world.
Yeah.
So he liked Edge of Tomorrow for that reason. I wouldn't say, I've never really been a Tom Cruise fan, but the performances that he's given that I like. Like Jerry Maguire.
I really
like him, Jerry Maguire. I love him in Tropic Thunder.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah, I love him in Tropic Thunder. So I do agree. I think this film relies a bit too much on him. And there's bits where you can see he's trying to do something a bit different.
Yeah.
Like the conversations with Jake Johnson, the guy who plays his friend in it.
Yeah.
I thought Jake Johnson was good, and he was great at this sort of like comic fall relief while they're going through a gun battle. He's like, I'm going to kill you. I can't believe you got me into this. And all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I like that character, but there were bits when they're doing like a back and forth sort of like repartee thing kind of going, and I actually imagined Will Ferrell being in that role instead of Tom Cruise, and I think that might be a better film.
Yeah.
With Will Ferrell. Interesting film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the way the film ends and how the whole story pulls together, I feel like you've just destroyed all tension for any sequel that comes up. You've destroyed all tension because, oh, it's like, oh, what's going to happen? Oh, that person's dead. Well, it doesn't really matter because plot development.
Hmm.
So I feel like it's just destroyed all tension. So I would much rather watch The Mummy from the other day. So, guys, how many stars?
Well, I'm going to have to say, probably
out of five.
Out of five.
Two.
I would go three.
I'll say a begrudging two.
Yeah, because I mean,
it's passable enough.
Mm. It's passable.
Yeah, I'll watch it on a Saturday afternoon or something like that. But it's.
I mean, it's not a film I would go to watch again or go out of my way to watch again.
No, I wouldn't watch it again.
Whereas, I mean, Godzilla. I mean, I know that's going to be that.
Oh yeah,
multiverse as well, isn't there? That
Godzilla, so, and Kong, Skull Island.
I mean, I've seen that a few times. Skull Island, I've watched two or three times in an IMAX, but I wouldn't give this a second viewing, I'm afraid.
No. Okay, we're about to head off to an ad break, but quickly, for the last of the big hitters that we're going to talk about before we go into some films that maybe have not had as much publicity but we've seen as well and we want to talk about, Pirates of the Caribbean 5, that's still out in cinemas at the moment. Sean, you're the only one of us who's seen it.
I've seen it.
No, oh, you've seen it?
I've seen it.
Okay, cool. What do you guys... I haven't seen it.
To be fair, with Pirates of the Caribbean, they've been a bit hit and miss, I think, the series.
Yes.
But I did enjoy this one. I thought it was very Carry On.
Yep.
But
Carry On Up the Pirates.
Carry On Up the Pirates, you know, who are misses.
Carry On Up the Caribbean, maybe.
But yeah, I did enjoy this movie. I thought it was fun.
I must admit, it was one of those ones that my arm was up my back when I went to see it, because I'd always said I'm not going to bother with that one after having sat through the last couple and thought, when is this ever going to end? I thought, I'm not going to bother. But I did, and I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it was much more entertaining than I thought it was going to be.
All right.
And I thought even Johnny Depp as Jack Sparrow, because that's wearing a bit thin now, isn't it?
You're thinking, wearing very thin.
It's just transparent. You're thinking, really? More hair? But I thought he actually was in some ways redeemed himself in this film, in that it was like, yes, he was good in it.
Yeah.
I was surprised, because the last year I was just like, oh, please end this film, please end.
Just pop in the one thing, but the end scene in it was like,
oh, I know.
That was just like, you know, my favourite.
You just sometimes you end the films and then you go.
My unfavourite actress.
Sometimes these end scenes, you're thinking, I think that had quite a good resolution to the story. I was quite happy that this, to me, would be like the last part of this sequence. And then they bung in an end of credit scene and you think, oh, come on. Well, you think they're going to probably drag it out for another film potentially, and you think, oh, give it up.
Well, they are, as long it's Hollywood, as long as it's making money,
they'll keep doing it.
You see, as long as you at home keep watching these films, they're going to keep making them. Because the thing is, what you say about the Jack Sparrow thing, I thought that the first Pirates worked really, really well because he wasn't the main character.
Yes.
And a lot of people have forgotten about the fact that he wasn't actually the main character. I was really, really scared when the fourth movie came out and it was all about him.
Yeah.
It was all about Jack Sparrow, and I was like, nah, this guy works well as a side character who's running around, all like the plot is happening and he's running around doing stupid things around the plot.
Yeah.
He works that way. He doesn't really work as a main character for me, if you ask.
No, he doesn't for me either. I'm not interested in him enough to be committed for 2-3 hours, whatever it is.
You just want him to be a buffoon and do his buffoony thing. Yeah. You don't want him to come up and have like a backstory and like, you know, pathos and all that kind of stuff. You don't want that. That's the way you go to Jack Sparrow for.
Yeah.
But I mean,
to be fair, it was
an entertaining... I mean, yeah, it's not a deep thinker film by any means. But for like, if it's a Saturday afternoon entertainment, it was entertaining. It ticked the boxes at the end. There was entertaining. There was some sort of resolution in some ways to previous films. There was drama. There was enough sort of special effects that you go, oh, that's a bit different, or that's a bit new.
Yeah.
Whereas some of the others, you think, oh, haven't we seen all this before?
Zombie sharks was good. You'd like that, didn't you?
Yeah, I didn't mind the zombie sharks. But I was wondering, how could they couldn't digest you, could they? You'd go straight through.
But from what I hear, the scuttlebutt I've been hearing has been saying it's the best one since the first one.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Agreed.
Okay, all right. Cool, so how many stars would you guys give it?
I'd have to give it 3.5 this one.
I was going to say 3.5, yeah. That's
all
my
right,
thought.
Cool. Okay, good. So that's what we have. So we have Wonder Woman 4 all around. Mummies, yeah, depending. So going anywhere between 3 and 2. So we'll say 2.5, where Sean ended up. Like, you might want to go see that.
Yeah.
And Pirates of the Caribbean, 3.5.
It's
distracting enough for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
All right, we're going into an ad break, and then we'll be back now with films that... you might not have seen much of because they don't have a big advertising budget, but we've gone to see them and let you know what they're all about.
stay social and get in touch. It's /Vectis Radio on Facebook. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
And welcome back to the Movie Review Show on Vectis Radio. Yes, it's still me, Tosin. I am here with Sean.
Hello.
And Sharon.
Hello.
So, in the first half, we went through the big hitters of the cinema right now, the films that you will have heard about even if you tried not to. Wonder Woman, The Mummy, and Pirates of the Caribbean 4. And now we're going to go into films that are a bit smaller that you may not have heard about. You might not even realize are showing or were showing, because some of them are so small they've already left on the island. And we have The Shack, we have Norman, and we have something that's a preview, hasn't even been released, quite frankly, yet. Gifted, which Sean went because he, like I think the both of us, the rest of us, are all Unlimited members.
Yes, indeed we are.
So
there's black cards, I do believe, as well.
Black cards.
Yeah, we
not red ones.
Yeah, we feel like high rollers when walking into the cinema. It's like, just show the black card, walk right past everybody, no need to buy anything, send my popcorn to my seat, that kind of thing. Right, so let's kick off with Norman, first of all. So,
okay.
Sean, you saw Norman. Can you tell us a little bit about what Norman's about?
Yeah, of course. It was a film, yeah, Norman, it's about this, Richard Gere plays this Jewish fixer, I guess you'd call him. Basically, he runs around and he finds this politician that's a bit down on his luck.
Yep.
And he buys him a new pair of shoes, and this politician becomes really big, ends up becoming Prime Minister of Israel, whatever. And it's just about Richard Gere doing all these little deals. And there's lots of cameos with different people. It's a really, really, I would imagine it's really, really, it's a film about Jewish. And if you were Jewish, you would totally, totally get this movie. It's got a few strange scenes of, like, almost surreal scenes with loads of faces of stars popping up. It's an odd movie. It's a very, very strange movie. To start off with, I found it a bit hard going, but I gradually got into it, and I really, really thought it was okay. Not a masterpiece, but I should imagine that if you knew that society,
sort of culture,
if you knew
yeah.
that culture, if you knew everything else like that, it would probably be that they'd really enjoy it. I wasn't sure if it was a comedy or not. I didn't really know what it was supposed to be. I didn't know if it was supposed to be a comedy or heartfelt film.
Are you allowed to laugh at this bit?
Yeah.
So do you reckon that, does it work as a bit of a window into a Jewish community?
I would think so, yeah. I would say so, because it's all about him doing these deals and, like, meeting people and on the phone. And even though he hasn't met these people, he says he knows this person, and he can set up a meeting with this person.
Oh,
and then he goes, so it's all like, you know,
he's a bit like a Del Boy or something.
I guess you could say so. But what he'd do, he'd strike up conversations with people, and they say, oh, what do you do and all that? Oh, I'm a newspaper person, something like that. And then he would go, oh, I know, so he'd go to someone else, I know so and so with the newspaper, I can fix you up a meeting with him if you like. And
yeah.
So he sort of manipulates it and likes to become this famous. And of course, when the politician that he helped out at the start sees him, he's like, you remembers him, Norman,
and
basically, I mean, I like these political thrillers. Basically, all the advisors, whatever, are like, you've got to ditch him. You can't be his friend. You can't, because
yeah.
And so, you know, it's a bit of a sad end because.
Well, it sounds like it, because this has been described to me as Richard Gere playing a role that should have been played by Woody Allen.
Yeah, probably.
And it sounds like he's a bit of, like, he's down on his luck, and he's essentially, in the Simpsons, there's mm-hmm. a character, Old Gil. Yeah, who's always down on his luck, and is always like, oh, come on, I just need this one more deal. That kind of guy. And it seems like he's that kind of character, that kind of, doesn't really have anything going for him apart from his mouth.
His mouth, yeah, he's just a talker.
And he just talks and talks and talks and tries to say, oh, I know this person, I know that person. Yeah, I'm important, listen to me, all that kind of
stuff.
That's
it, yeah, he wants to be important, and he sort of invites himself to functions, you know, he sort of turns up at places where he's not supposed to be, and, you know, they say, but, you know.
Yeah, how did you get in?
Yeah, how did you get in? But, so it's great, and it's about all these deals, and he actually ends up doing some people some really good favours, saving a synagogue and all sorts of things. But he has to, you know. Well, I won't put the ending of the
story. So, Norman, would you recommend it? How many stars?
I would give that. I would probably give it a 3-star. So, okay. But it probably is meant for a certain audience, I would think. But it's still watchable, still a watchable movie. You know, Jewish, strange movie.
Jewish New Yorkers.
Yeah, it's a strange, it's an odd movie.
Okay, all right. And now let's move on to The Shack. Now, Sharon, you're the only one of us who's seen this.
Yes, I went to see The Shack this week. We had a limited screening. It was only on sort of twice a day for just this week.
Oh, right. Maybe that was a preview. Hopefully.
Yeah, so I saw it this week. Yeah, The Shack, it's based on it was a best-selling novel from about, I'm trying to think, 5-7 years ago.
Sounds right about right, yeah.
And it was huge in the church circles, in Christian circles. It's based on a Christian book. I'm trying to think of the author. I think his name is something like Paul William Young or William Paul Young, something like that.
Sounds right, yeah.
But basically the story is it's a man, played by Sam Worthington in the film, who, on a family holiday with his three young children, something dreadful happens to his youngest daughter. And then the rest of the film, he's like trying to reconcile himself with his faith and his understanding of God and his understanding of how this dreadful thing could possibly happen to people who believe in God. And because they're church-going family, his wife's a devout Christian, and he just can't understand why God would allow this tragedy to happen.
Yeah.
And then one day he gets a letter in the post, seemingly from God, saying, "Meet me at the shack." And the shack is the place where this tragedy happened, where his something awful happened to his young daughter.
Yeah.
And he thinks this is some sort of sick joke, and he tries to find out where this letter comes from. And in the end, he decides he's just going to go and see what happens. Then when he turns up at the shack, he meets a man there who invites him to go on this journey with him. And he goes down this path, and it goes from like winter to summer. And in this path, he meets this black woman. Mm-hmm. And it's like, "Who are you?" And she says, "I am." And he means what the I am. And if you're a Christian, you know that I am is the name for God.
Yeah.
And she is this motherly black woman played by Olivia Spencer. Always watching. Octavia Spencer. She's a wonderful actress in The Help. And she was in
Hidden Figures.
Yeah, yep. She's always entertaining to watch. But she plays God the Father, but as this warm, motherly figure. And as the backstory of this character, he's had a really difficult relationship with his father. He had an abusive relationship with his father. And when he meets her, this person, and he says, "Well, no, what, you can't be God." And it's like, "You don't need a father figure right now. This is what you need to see."
Yeah.
And then he introduces her to the son, who's played by this young man, black hair, beard, talks with an Israeli accent. they never use any names. They just have these three titles. Papa is the name of like the God the Father figure, then the Son, and then you meet the Holy Spirit, who's played by this like Native American woman with long flowing hair, and she sort of shimmers.
Uh-huh.
And she's like the Spirit of God. She's the Holy Spirit.
Yep.
And so he then spends the next 3 days in this cabin and exploring the nature of God, basically, the nature of the Godhead, the Trinity, trying to understand, and then putting these hard questions, saying, "How on earth did you allow this to happen, this tragedy?
If you exist, why did this happen to my daughter?"
Yeah, why did you allow this to happen? Or why did you, let these evil things happen? And then you have these sort of hard conversations. You have a conversation with the son about their relationship. And there's some really interesting moments about it.
Okay, cool. All right, we're almost out of time before Brian comes in for his show.
Yeah.
So I just thought, because this is a film that to me, I kind of look at it and go, this one can't really win. Because the second you said that this one was about somebody having a conversation with God, that is going to alienate a whole section
absolutely.
Of people who don't want to watch this film. And I think even when the book was released, I know there were people within the Christian community who had issues with the fact that, like, first of all, hunger, God's a black woman? Yeah. What are you talking about? So if it seems to be like this film really can't win because it's not really going to get people in. It's not there. So what would you say to people who are thinking, "Oh, hang on a second, Christian, I'm not sure about that."
Well,
or people who are thinking, "Oh, if we're going to say God's a black woman, I'm not sure about that."
And at one point, God the Father is a Native American man played by Graham Greene.
Okay.
And so, because at that point, he said, "You need a father for this." And they have a conversation with God the Father.
So God's interchangeable.
He just changes his appearance.
Depending on what people need.
Yeah.
That's what
what he needs, this one particular character. It's like, this is what you need at this moment.
Yeah.
And I think I went with my Bible study group because I'm a Christian and I go to church and I have a little group we meet together. And so we all went together. We went, the five of us, some of our members weren't there, so five of us who was available went, and then we met and had pizza afterwards to talk about it. And we were saying, would you invite these people? Who at church would you invite to see this? Who outside of church would you invite to see this? And would you be comfortable watching this with someone who wasn't a Christian? And we had quite a long conversation about this. And basically, I think personally, I felt that it was probably more for Christians to watch. I don't know that people outside the church would get it particularly, though I think it had some excellent ideas, and theologically I thought it was good all the way through. There weren't many moments where I thought, hang on a minute, that's wrong. No, I thought they did it really well. But it, because it is full on Christianity, it's full in your face, there's no escaping what it's about or where they stand, I think it would be deeply uncomfortable for anyone who doesn't have a faith or who doesn't get faith.
Oh, cool.
But I like
uncomfortable. You say uncomfortable.
I think people would be uncomfortable. Well, because of the subject matter, this is dealing with a deep, deep personal tragedy for this man.
Right.
And one of the things they have to tackle is about forgiveness. And I know people would find it quite hard to reconcile what they were saying about forgiveness and what, you know, what this film was saying about those things.
Okay.
But there's some great scenes about with the son, but they had the scene where they walk on water basically. And he's a carpenter and he makes something which is really, really moving in the film. My only criticism of the film really is that it is sentimental.
Yeah.
And in some ways you could say that it is almost manipulative in the way it wants you to react emotionally to certain scenes. Yeah. The music, everything is geared up to make you feel. Right, but there was some beautiful
I didn't realise it was that sort of film. I wonder what that's about, because I probably would have gone and seen it, and now I probably
no, I would say see it if you're going to be
I'm quite open minded, so it might be quite, I mean, it sounds quite interesting with Native Americans and black women and
but there's some really interesting ideas in there. I thought it was done well.
Yeah, so I reckon that there's, because just from, and I think at least the way it seems to be going about like asking some of these questions, hard questions, the way it chooses to answer them, I don't know about, because I think I've read about a third of the book, and I think I like the way it's presenting it. Way it's presenting it, and it's a way in which it's the kind of film that I feel should be shown, and then you should have a Q&A afterwards.
Yes, exactly.
That's the kind of film that I think that it probably could be. So how many stars out of five would you give it?
I would give it four.
Is it slow? But I would, slow paced or
I think it's not slow. It's paced,
right,
as in it doesn't rush into anything, it doesn't rush to an answer, it doesn't rush to a conclusion. I think it's a modestly paced film, that you've got it, but it kept you with it all the way through.
Okay.
Because you wanted to think, how is this going? How are they going to deal with that?
Where is this going to go? What turns are going to take next?
Yeah, and so I think they stayed away from sort of hyperbole, and they stayed away from histrionics, which I thought, you know, it had a calming... God was wonderful in it.
Octavia Spencer, hey.
She was just brilliant. She's like, I'm especially fond of you. And then it was like, is there anyone you're not especially fond of? And it's like, no.
So no, I like it. It's like, if you're going to cast Octavia Spencer, you really can't go, go much wrong with that. All right, cool. So for that, we had a very, very Jewish film that might be hard for people who are not Jews to get into. We had a very, very Christian film that might be hard with people.
Yeah.
And so we now have a film, Gifted. Is it hard for people who are not gifted to get into?
No, this would be this would be an anyone movie. This would be a light-hearted, you know. It's basically a little child prodigy, really, really incredibly terrific mathematician. She's with her uncle because her mum's committed suicide.
All right.
Said, I want her brought up as a kid. Mm-hmm. I don't want her to be a prodigy. I don't want her to go to special schools. I don't want her to be. But anyway, in the end, the little girl ends up going to the school, and one of the teachers there says, oh, it's really, it's surprising. She's like so, so talented that she should go a bit further, and he doesn't really want her to, but then it goes up to the heads, and it goes up, and the grandmother of the little girl, the mother of Chris Evans, who plays the uncle, decides to get involved, and then it becomes a bit of a nip and tuck, and a bit of a, you know, everybody wants, she wants,
it becomes like a sort of custody battle.
Yeah, it's basically a custody battle. So it's one of those, it's a nice movie, it's a good movie, it's not, you know, it's what you expect really.
Yeah.
So
essentially what you'll expect from a gifted child movie.
The gifted child movie.
So your
little
man Tate.
Yeah. Little man Tate was what came to my mind. Yeah,
little man Tate, yeah. So
it's like, what's best for the child, you know, versus
what's best for the child.
How do you develop that potential?
But there is an interesting Mm. Yeah, good, yes. Well-handed. But there is an interesting twist at the end, which is it's quite interesting because you know the grandmother wanted obviously for her daughter to solve this puzzle, which was and of course so. She wants her granddaughter to solve this puzzle. So there's a puzzle involved as well.
So it's kind of like a pushy grandmother.
Who just wants this, you know, and whatever. And of course, the grandmother's got loads of money. She's totally loaded. So she's got all the things going for her.
Always. Is there any other kind of grandmother movies?
The poor old uncle fixes boats, you know. Although he is a teacher as well. So.
And he does look like Chris Evans.
He does, yeah. Well, all the
the American one, not the British radio host.
Yeah. So with the teacher that originally taught the little girl, you know, obviously there's a bit of and all the teacher like, ooh, you know,
hello.
So hello, yeah. What do you think of Chris Evans?
Yeah, I'm in favour of him.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So how many stars out of 4?
I'd give it 4.
Okay, cool. 4.
Good.
4, nice.
Yeah. So which is unusual for me for that sort of movie.
I was not expecting that at all. All right, so that's Norman, The Shack, and Gifted. These are your 3 films that you might not have heard much about, but are out in the cinemas. So do go find them. Do go track them down. Well, thank you very much for being with us for our first show. That is the movie review show of Vectis Radio. We have Brian waiting now to come in there for his show, and we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. www.vectisradio.com